Chapter 18. Artful Dodging. Palpatine had been on Coruscant for just over 2 standard months when the Senate convened to vote on whether or not to seat Felucia, Makana, and a half a dozen other planets considered by many to be client worlds of the Trade Federation. In the hope of generating public interest, Coruscant Climate Control had promised to provide perfect weather over the government district. Clouds had been swept aside, and orbital mirrors had been positioned to provide maximum daylight. Maintenance droids had refreshed the paving stones of Senate Plaza and polished the 30-meter-tall statues that lined the avenue of the Corps founders. Police had cordoned off large areas of the district between levels 55 and 106 and deployed sniper units, squads of bomb detector automata, and 3 times the usual number of security hover cams. Reporters, documentarians, freelance journalists, and op-ed columnists were out in force, calling in favors in an effort to be as close to the action as possible. Limousine services were working overtime, and taxis were nearly impossible to find, which left aides and assistants to fend for themselves. Arriving on foot or by maglev, ensembles freshly laundered, headpieces blocked, fur coiffed, boots buffed. Even the Jedi Knights and Padawans stationed throughout the plaza as a show of force appeared to be sporting their cleanest robes and tunics. Analysts were touting the vote as landmark, though it had been an admittedly slow news week on Coruscant. More to the point, a vast majority of the capital's residents couldn't have cared less about the outcome, since most only knew of the Trade Federation through self-serving advertisements that streamed on the holonet. Local gossip was always more interesting than politics in any case. For weeks, however, opponents and supporters of the amendments that would revise the rules regarding member status in the Republic had been giving voice to their arguments in the Great Rotunda, often vociferously enough to shake their repulsor lift platforms, jabbing fingers and other appendages in the air for emphasis or accusation, in defiance of calls by the Vice Chancellor for order and decorum. Standing with Saint Pestige and Kinman Doriana beneath the abstract statue of Corps founder Tyler Sapius Praji, Palpatine felt one step closer to his destined place, even if the scene in the plaza struck him as more Vanity Fair than senatorial assembly. Like many of the others, he had been out half the night drinking and dining with lobbyists eager to win his favor. At Tapcaf's cantinas, restaurants, and nightclubs throughout the entertainment districts, credits had flowed freely. Whispered bribes had been proffered, promises made, deals struck. Now some of the players he had encountered during the long evening were shuffling, bleary-eyed, through the gaping entrances of the umbrella-shaped Senate building. Senators and their top aides, commissioners of the investment sector and securities exchange, members of the Trade Federation delegation, and the board of the Intergalactic Banking Clan. Elsewhere on the broad avenue, at key intersections, taxi stops, and maglev exits, stood groups of Jedi, a few with the hilts of their lightsabers conspicuously visible. For Palpatine, the sight of so many of them in one place was at once exhilarating and sobering. Though thoroughly cloaked in the everyday, he could feel their collective pride trickle into him through the Force. Only the baseness of Coruscant's populace, the almost sheer absence of anything natural, kept the world from being as strong in the light as Korriban was in the dark. While he accepted that he and Plagueis were more than equal to the most powerful of the Jedi Order, he understood that they were no match for their combined strength, the Sith Imperative notwithstanding. The Jedi would fall only with the full collaboration of the dark side. That was, only when the dark side of the Force was ready and willing to conspire in their downfall. His musings were interrupted by a sudden gust of wind, whipped up by a luxurious landspeeder that was alighting in the center of the avenue. Preceded by a vanguard of ceremonial guards wearing floor-length blue robes, Supreme Chancellor Darris emerged, waving to the crowd and for the hovercams that rushed in to immortalize his every expression. Palpatine studied him as the guards began to maneuver him through the throng, a train of hand-picked journalists following dutifully in his wake. The easy way he carried himself, the way he made a point to stop and greet some while ignoring others, the way he laughed on cue. He recalled the two coronations he and his father had attended in Theed, and could remember as if yesterday the envy that had wafted from Kosinga like sour sweat. How cravenly his inept father had desired to wield such power. And would that Kosinga could see his son now, standing so close to the center, surveying the Senate as Kosinga might have the Palpatine lands in the Lake Country, thinking, "Everything that my gaze falls on will be mine. These buildings, these monads, these statues I will have slagged, this airspace whose use I will restrict to the powerful, that penthouse in 500 Republica, this Senate." Again his musings were interrupted, this time by the Grand Protectorate Senator Paxteam, who was waddling briskly toward him, followed closely by the senators from Liana, Ariadu, and Sullust.
"Are you ready to make history, Senator?" Team said, his eye stalks quivering in excitement.
"Rather than be a casualty of it," Palpatine told him. The Grand grunted in amusement.
"Well said, young sir. Needless to say, many are counting on you."
"Better many than all, because we cannot please everyone." Team grew serious.
"Perhaps not. But we can strike a blow for utilitarianism. The greatest good for the greatest number."
Palpatine smiled in the way he had seen Doris smile.
"And strike a blow we shall, Senator." "Good, good," Team chortled. "Then we'll see you inside, where the galaxy's business is done."
Pestage snorted a laugh as Team was moving away.
"The greatest good for the greatest Grand."
It was true. Team harbored no ill toward the Trade Federation. He merely wanted to see Naboo blunder. He go Damask, cut down to size, and Malastare returned to its quondam grandeur. The contingent of senators had scarcely left when Palpatine heard his name called. Turning, he saw Ranha Kim in the company of two older human Jedi. Quietly, he pulled his powers deeper into himself and adopted a mask of cordiality.
"Jedi Ranha," he said,
inclining his head in greeting. The black-haired Jedi returned the nod.
"Senator Palpatine, may I introduce Masters Dooku and Sifo Dyas?"
Palpatine was familiar with the former, but only by reputation.
"A great honor, Masters."
Dooku appraised him openly, then arched an eyebrow.
"Excuse me for staring, Senator, but Ranha's descriptions of you led me to expect someone older."
"I disguise myself well, Master Dooku. My age, that is."
"Either way," Sifo Dyas remarked, "a talent required by your position."
"An ignoble truth, Master Sifo Dyas, but we strive to remain faithful to our conscience."
Dooku smiled with purpose.
"Hold tight to that, Senator Palpatine. Coruscant will surely test your resolve."
Ranha Kim had his mouth open to speak when another familiar voice rang out.
"I didn't realize that you were acquainted."
Over Dooku's shoulder, Palpatine saw in surprise that Higo Damask, Larsh Hill, and two other black-robed Munes were threading their way toward him. That he hadn't sensed his master spoke to Plagueis' power to completely conceal himself even from a fellow Sith.
"Magister Damask,"
Dooku and Sifo Dyas said simultaneously, turning to greet him. Damask looked at Palpatine.
"Recently, on Sereno, in fact, Masters Dooku, Sifo Dyas, and I engaged in a spirited discussion about the current state of the galaxy and our hopes for the future."
"Sereno?" Palpatine said, more to himself and mildly confounded. Damask hadn't said anything about Jedi attending the meeting there, so what message was he sending now? Glancing at the trio of Jedi, he thought back to his master's remark that even Jedi could be turned to the dark.
Had the near-bungled assassination of Vidar Kim persuaded Plagueis to entice and recruit a Jedi to serve as his apprentice?
Ranha just introduced us to the Senator, Sifo Dyas was explaining. Dooku's eyes moved from Damask to Palpatine and back again.
May I inquire how it is that you and the Senator know each other?
Damask motioned to Palpatine.
Senator Palpatine and Damask Holding share a dream for Naboo.
He gestured inclusively to Hill and the other Munes.
Palpatine was one of the few who early on saw the wisdom of ushering in a new era for his homeworld.
Palpatine sensed scrutiny from someone outside the circle the ten of them had formed. Just short of the Senate building's great door, Pak's team had stopped and was gazing at Palpatine, his eye stalks extended. And Palpatine could scarcely blame him, since even he had been caught off guard by Plagueis' eagerness to acknowledge him in public.
How does it feel to have realized your wish for your homeworld? Dooku said.
Palpatine came back to himself.
One can't very well stand in the way of destiny.
Again, Dooku glanced from Palpatine to Damask.
The will of the Force begets uncommon fellowships.
Chimes sounded, announcing that the session was beginning, and everyone began to file through the doors into the massive structure, going their separate ways from the atrium, some to spectators' boxes or media areas, others, like Palpatine, Sate, and Kinmon, to turbolifts that accessed Naboo's station in the Senate's middle tier, one of 1,000 identical docking stations in the rotunda, outfitted with a detachable repulsor lift platform and a suite of private offices. Central to the artificially lighted space was an elegant tower emblazoned with the seal of the Republic, at the summit of which rested the Supreme Chancellor's podium. Doris, the Vice-Chancellor, and the administrative aide were already present, and after brief introductory remarks by the Supreme Chancellor, the Vice-Chancellor called the matter to a vote. A few senators spoke, but most simply cast their votes, a tally of which was relayed to monitor screens at each station and projected overhead along the inner curve of the dome. By the time the Vice-Chancellor recognized the Chommel sector, the vote was tied. Though Palpatine's vote would break the stalemate, several systems had yet to weigh in. Detached from the docking station, the platform carried Palpatine out over the lower tiers and deep into the kilometers-wide rotunda. A hush fell over a portion of the Senate, and he inhaled the moment deep into himself. Still, the platform continued to move toward the podium, as if even the Supreme Chancellor wanted a closer look at him, and it pleased him to know that his reputation had spread that far. Then Palpatine spoke to them.
The Trade Federation came to Naboo some 10 years ago. It didn't arrive by force, but by invitation, after a vast reservoir of plasma was discovered beneath Naboo's lush mantle, vast enough to supply clean energy to hundreds of disadvantaged worlds along the Hydean Way, and at the same time, introduce Naboo to the galactic community. Following months of reasoned debate, our newly elected monarch decided that Naboo should share its resources with the galaxy. Agreements were struck between Naboo and the Trade Federation, along with several construction conglomerates. Mining was begun, processing plants were constructed, and spaceports were enlarged to accommodate the fleet of shuttles needed to ferry the plasma to cargo ships parked in orbit. 3 years later, plasma was flowing out into the galaxy and wealth was flowing into Naboo and the worlds of the Chommel sector, and an era of unprecedented prosperity had begun. That prosperity came with hidden costs, but Naboo was willing to absorb them, primarily for the sake of those beings who were benefiting from what nature had bequeathed to our small world.
He paused and turned slightly in the direction of the Trade Federation's platform.
The Trade Federation has been accused of price-fixing, exploitation, and monopolistic practices, but those matters are not at issue today.
Today, the Republic is being asked to widen its embrace to include several planets in the outlying systems many consider to be client worlds of the cartel. Many of you are concerned that seating these worlds will tip the balance of power by giving the Trade Federation and its corporate allies too strong a voice in the Senate. But was this matter not already settled when the courts of justice ruled that the Trade Federation should be treated as if it were a world? That decision opened the door to entities like the Commerce Guild, the Techno Union, and the Corporate Alliance, all of which enjoy their separate platforms in this hall. So the issue of legality is not up for debate. Instead, we must set ourselves to the task of deciding if the Trade Federation has become too aggressive in its pursuit of a louder voice.
Again he paused, this time to allow individual debates to come and go.
Not 3 standard months ago,
he said at last,
the Charmel Sector's senator of long standing was assassinated here on Coruscant. Senator Kim was known to many of you as an honest being, concerned about the growing influence of the cartels and the potential for a shift in power in the Senate. His tragic death provoked allegations and prompted investigations, and yet no progress has been made in determining the motive for his murder or identifying the agents behind it. This despite inquires by judicials, the Senate Investigatory Committee, even the Jedi Order. As a consequence of, and yes, in protest against the manner in which the investigation into Senator Kim's death has been handled, I am instructed by my regent, King Bon Tapelo, to announce that Naboo and the Charmel Sector worlds are abstaining from the vote.
The hush that had fallen over a select section of the Senate spread to include the entire rotunda. Then the outburst that erupted, both damning and championing, was so clamorous and prolonged that the Vice Chancellor ultimately curtailed his attempts to restore order and let chaos reign.